Guys, I am so sorry that it took so long to make this Patreon episode. The main reason is just because I had so much traveling to do and a bunch of work that I needed to finish that I didn't really have time to just sit down and record this episode. Even though I had written out my notes and was ready to record something for a while, I just didn't have the time to sit down and do it. But now I'm finally being able to do it. And yeah, the paper Decentralized Society, in case you don't know, was written by Vitalik Buterin along with two others, Glenn Weil from Radical Exchange and Pooja Olhaver from Flashbots. And so when it first came out, it made a pretty big splash just because especially anything that Vitalik writes essentially becomes quite big, especially when it's published in a kind of scientific journal type of way. It was originally posted May 11th, 2022. And since then, people have been buzzing about this new term that he created called soulbound tokens. Soulbound being a reference to a type of item in World of Warcraft, where if you have a character and get a special type of item called a soulbound item, that item is not exchangeable or you can't be bought or sold within the World of Warcraft markets. We can't trade it with people, for example. And it caused a lot of buzz because he proposes it as a type of identity-related solution or through attestations, and we'll get into that. But a lot of people were sort of freaking out about sort of the name, and I decided to read through it myself and take a peek at what exactly Vitalik is proposing and make a kind of judgment of whether or not it's a decent idea or not. So in this Patreon episode, I'm hoping I can go through some of my thoughts and summarize a bit of the paper to share with you guys sort of what are my thoughts about it and what I think is interesting and what I think is maybe perhaps problematic. So let's get it into the review of Decentralized Society, Finding Web3 Soul by Vitalik. So the Decentralized Society paper starts off pretty aware with some of the trends and some of the issues that are happening in the cryptocurrency world right now. So they note that many of the contradictions in the Web3 space include heavy reliance on centralized platforms for NFTs, for example, like OpenSea, social media profiles like Twitter to create civil resistance and identity, and as well as custodial wallets that are provided by centralized exchanges, which a lot of users still rely on, and the markets and industry itself sort of relies on at the same time. And so because of these issues, there has been all these trends, of course, for converging on the idea that there's a need for some form of more expressive identity for the crypto world, for crypto native people, so that they can build more useful types of crypto applications that would be more akin to what we have to deal with in real economic activities. For example, a big one they note is under-collateralized loans. So, for example, taking a mortgage on a house at the moment is not really possible because there is no appropriate identity solution on a crypto system. So right now, if you take out a loan for a house, it's under-collateralized, you're only giving the down payment, and then the bank sort of knows basically all of your appropriate personal information, they can sort of ruin your credit score, they can do a bunch of types of things that would, you know, incentivize you to stay true to the mortgage loan that you took out with them. Another example that they note as well is, for example, being able to lease an apartment and things like this. At the moment, is not really possible with crypto. And so in a nutshell, what sort of DSOC is sort of like this vision for the future. But part of this vision for the future includes a few technological primitives that they outline that are based on blockchains. And so the first one that they talk about are souls. It sounds a little bit creepy. I know everybody sort of made that comment. But a soul they describe as an account that can be recovered through social or community relationships. And so like the relationships in which you would be a part of or which that would be noted in your soul would be tracked by soulbound tokens or SVTs, because the SVTs act as credentials to prove some sort of relationship. So I would have, you know, an SBT showing that I'm part of some group or some organization. And that would be recorded in my soul, which is my account, which rather than being solely like a normal public key, which I would have to personally keep track and make sure is safe, my private key in order to access that, your soul would instead be able to be recoverable. So in case you lose your private key, for example, through these social relationships. So since I have an SBT that is associated with, for example, my homeowners association, even though I'm never going to probably own a home at this rate, I can use my relationships with people in the homeowners association to help me recover my wallet if I've ever lost it. So this is something that Vitalik has actually already written quite a bit about on social recovery as a way to sort of get around this critique that having an account on a blockchain is sort of very individualistic and it puts a lot of strain on the single user to be able to track their private key. And if the case that they lose it, they could lose everything that they have if they have everything in their wallet. And so they describe in the paper this quote. So SBTs would be like an extended resume issued by other wallets that attest to these social relationships. And so there is like an immediate reaction from me, right? For me, it's a bit strange to describe soulbound tokens as like a resume. To me, that's sort of like a red flag to me. I don't want to have kind of my resume publicly available all the time. And so necessary for maybe being able to access various services, but to an extent already, that is kind of the case as far as like, if you're in America, you need to have a credit score or you need to have like no history of committing federal crimes or something like that. But there is something off-putting about having all that information in one place and could prove to be a privacy nightmare. They sort of note that this could be a privacy nightmare, but they also later in the paper describe some solutions with zero-knowledge proofs in order to get around that. But on another side, in that quote, what I think is interesting is that they talk about social relationships. So what they're trying to do is sort of bring in the aspect of the social into blockchain world, which they critique as being too financialized or going down the path of hyper-financialization, which is pretty interesting coming from someone who is a founder of Ethereum, which is one of the largest blockchains out there for decentralized finance. And so I think decentralized key management is, you know, this sort of social recovery stuff is pretty interesting. And I think it's actually pretty useful and probably necessary if we are going to live in some sort of future where crypto is everywhere. So I do think there's something interesting about that. Another quote that I like, how they describe decentralized society or DSOC, is they call it a co-determined sociality where souls and communities come together bottom up as emergent properties of each other to co-create plural network goods, including plural intelligences at a range of social scales. So that's a little bit complicated, but I think from a conceptual point of view, it sounds interesting. But I think that the details of this implementation are super important. The downside is that, of course, they don't go into too many specific examples of implementations for souls and soulbound tokens. I think they're sort of describing it in a high level way, sort of conceptually. And now over time, they're going to begin to create maybe some sort of technical implementations. And people are already doing that probably at the Ethereum Foundation or in these Ethereum hackathons. I know for sure there's already a standard for soulbound tokens that's being proposed if it hasn't been passed already. But so what is interesting about the paper as well, what they do is they describe different use cases at an increasing complexity. So they are very aware that what they're proposing can sound dangerous, it can sound kind of weird, that it sounds very far-fetched, and it's something that they admit we're very far from actually achieving or creating. And so they start off with sort of very simple examples for using soulbound tokens. So one of the first ones that they describe is, for example, for artists, where artists can use soulbound tokens to sort of authenticate their artworks as a way to recontextualize art in a way that technology sort of decontextualizes art at the same time. I think it's perhaps a noble thing, interesting thing for artists to explore. I'm not 100% sure on how that would work and what that would meaningfully do, but they do hint at it as being a way to sort of prevent deep fakes and, you know, artificial intelligences, sort of, or like people stealing art from artists. And maybe that could be interesting. I think it has a bit of similarity towards what I've seen a lot of these kind of supply chain based blockchain use cases that I hear, especially from enterprises, where it's basically like this, in the most like positive framework, it could be seen as kind of a contextualization provided to commodities. In this case, we're talking about art, but it's a super common thing for supply chains type of companies trying to look for using blockchain. And I've, you know, interviewed a couple of people who have described this as being a potentially positive thing in the sense that we are contextualizing the commodities that we produce, since commodity production is understood as being something that is highly alienating because you, perhaps as a consumer, do not know anything about the person who produced that commodity, which is sort of heavily imbued in the commodity itself. And so, like, there is maybe something positive or interesting to say about using soulbound tokens or whatever else as a way to contextualize various artifacts, including commodities, including also art, and NFT art, I guess, could be like a pretty easy space to experiment with that. From there, they focus on uncollateralized loans, which is a bit problematic for me since it really feeds into like this neoliberal notion about providing easier credit as a solution, just doing it through crypto protocols. And in one way, you can say, well, you know, we need this as a way for people to be able to live their lives similarly to how they live their lives today. But I think the much, much larger issue is that this type of thinking is sort of an admission that there is no other way to sort of live, that we need to have these very neoliberal institutions on loans and lending in order to like have housing, for example, or whatever else you need for uncollateralized loans for businesses, in order to have like a functioning economy. And so they cite this example from Bangladesh, which is pretty common for people who are really interested in microfinance as a way to solve poverty, which is extremely neoliberal, like always touted by like the World Bank and these types of institutions. This guy famous for creating the Grameen Bank, which is now part of the Bangladeshi state because it failed so badly, but it provided uncollateralized loans for the poorest of the poor in Bangladesh. And they touted some success stories, but after some time, it was proven that most of the success stories were actually failures, and most of the people who maybe had had small successes with some of the loans that they took out, many of them still died in abject poverty. And so, like, there is this issue where with uncollateralized loans, it requires some amount of social reputation to be staked rather than some sort of collateral to be staked. At the same time, though, these types of loans create relationships that reinforce whatever broader system you're existing in. So, like, what stops someone then from attacking you to recoup their losses? Like, if you take out a loan, you're very poor, all you have is like a hut in a slum, you're unable to pay your loans, people will just go and grab your little huts that you may live in the slums and just begin selling your roof, and you have no sort of recourse because you have no social reputation, you have no safety nets of relationships of people who are willing to protect you from these things. And so people get ripped off all the time with these things, and there is this sort of idealized view that staking social reputation for loans is somehow better than staking real collateral. But I think it's a whole lot more complicated than that. You know, if you default on your loan with social capital, then you no longer have this respect in your community that you would usually be afforded there. And so, like, in a way, this financial capital begins to undermine social capital. And in these instances, like, people are no longer able to live in dignity, and it worsens their poverty. And so, like, then what happens if you are using soulbound tokens and all of a sudden you default on your loan? You know, what do you do? You would have to split your credentials. You would have to create a new identity starting from scratch. It would become contaminated. And so it's hard for me to know, like, what exactly they plan on how to fix that. I'm extremely doubtful that there would be to be created some sort of perfect credit system that would be feasible in some way, but it really feeds into this whole like humane capitalism bullshit, which is unsurprising to be coming from the radical exchange, like radical markets type of people, since it's pretty clear that their ideology is liberalism. But yeah, I just feel like they could have used like credit unions as maybe like a better example or something else. But really, there is a lot of evidence that goes against all of this microfinance stuff. But so moving on, the community recovery stuff is still pretty interesting to me. I think it is interesting to think about having this sort of evolving and adapting group of people who would be able to assist you maybe in a time of crisis, i.e. whenever you lose your private key, for example, based on just sort of real-time attestations from your soulbound tokens. I think the privacy issue still needs to be fixed, though, or really, really needs to be hammered, because otherwise we're just sort of creating very public, very, very easily mineable and extractable information and data for large companies to take and use for who knows what types of purposes. It's hard to tell beforehand, but the idea itself is pretty interesting in that it sort of embeds security in sociality, which is sort of a type of alternative to using the state, for example, as type of security that would otherwise be afforded to. So here it's sort of like forcing people to become in tune with their communities or something like that. It forces you to be social and to have sort of mutual relationships between people in your community, which could be a good thing, could be a bad thing if your community is shit. I don't know. It's pretty complicated. So from there, they also are building upon for more complex use cases, which are heavily tied to their idea of pluralism. So by having this sort of record of all these attestations of the memberships that you are a part of in different communities, maybe there are certain reputation scores that are tied to that. From there, you can sort of build a type of system that is able to take into consideration what your attestations are, especially in a democratic context. So for them, they think that perhaps it could be interesting to downweight votes, for example, for people who may all have the same type of attestations, who are all voting in the same way, with the thinking that perhaps bots are infiltrating the system, which could be correct, but I feel like it really, really depends on how it's applied. I would think there could be situations in which soulbound tokens, which are highly correlated with working class people, for example, membership to a left-wing party which caters towards more working class people, could then have their votes sort of downvoted because so many people are voting in a particular way. And that would somehow be used as a way to keep stability within the system whenever maybe the system itself is not answering for all the problems of the people that make up that system. And so they have this sort of kind of weird, they're using this language of like intersectionality and pluralism as sort of like this ideal way of representing many different viewpoints, which on the surface I can understand. I think there is a need for intersectionality and like people who come from various places to sort of agree upon things, and that likely being something that is a more democratic outcome. But it's hard for me to say for sure that that's always going to be the case, and that this type of process could actually be used to sort of justify the kind of libertarian arguments that are like anti-majoritarian, which can be a highly anti-democratic way of thinking and governing. They also talk about how by having this system of attestations, we're able to sort of measure the amount of decentralization or pluralism, as they kind of prefer to use, of different communities and organizations. But again, hard for me to tell if that would necessarily be a net positive. Another one of the more interesting use cases that they talk about in regards to soulbound tokens is this idea of decomposable property rights. So they sort of break down different purposes of property and what like your sort of responsibilities are, what your roles could be around property. For example, using it, consuming it, destroying it, or profiting from it. So I think it was pretty interesting that they mention markets and politics as not being sort of separate places and not acknowledging sort of like the politics of markets and of property. And so it was really interesting to read how you could use different soulbound tokens that ascribe you to having particular responsibilities around property so that you can have a token that is about using something rather than just being sort of profiting from it, which goes against a lot of the sort of property maximalism, I guess you could call, that you see in a lot of crypto discourse, and how it's like sort of simplistically assumed that blockchain is sort of this amazing new technology for perfect property rights for everyone that are completely individualistic and can do whatever you want in digital space, blah, blah, blah. I think it was nice that they sort of broke that down a bit, and it sort of aligns with something that I've written about before or expressed about, which is thinking about property through the lens of usufruct, which is like essentially focusing on like a right to use certain things. So for example, the housing right token that I've written about in the past sees housing as a public good that everyone deserves, and so that token would infer rights over its use under certain conditions. And none of that housing would, however, be under a private property regime. So there are some similarities and things that I've thought about before and what they were kind of saying I felt like. So yeah, so I did like that. I thought that was interesting. And so it seems that DSOC, Decentralized Society, is sort of meant to be this vision where people can sort of, from a bottom-up way, create new institutions and new types of organizations that can sort of track their relationships with one another and between the institution itself and individuals, or between different individuals, as a way to sort of allow for more different types of social expression that would be useful in various contexts related to society. They're kind of playing this game of trying to be like a third way type of thing, which is extremely liberal. And I'm saying that because, for example, quotes, they say participatory governments didn't inevitably give rise to democracy. It also led to the rise of communism and fascism. So their liberal bias becomes very clear, and they're sort of trying to be this like third way where both sides are a different type of authoritarianism type of thing, which, of course, as a socialist, I find problematic. They describe Web 2 as being authoritarianism and DeFi as anarcho-capitalism, but also claiming that DeFi has this implicit centralization through collusion and market power, which is, I mean, something that any socialist could have told them from the very beginning. Of course, the whole idea behind DSOC and soulbound tokens has not really been very well accepted by everyone in the crypto community. You have a lot of people who have pushed back on the idea of soulbound tokens and really prefer some other paradigm or something that's way more obviously privacy preserving, even though in the paper they do go through some potential solutions for providing more privacy rather than having everything just on publicly on a public blockchain. And so people have sort of gravitated toward this other solution that's been proposed by this group called Disco.xyz, very different from the Disco Co-op, but it's led by someone named Evan McMullen, who she previously worked at Consensus and is looking to use things called verifiable credentials, or VCs, that are compatible with blockchains as a way to sort of handle identity. And it's a very, very different paradigm. They don't use blockchains for it. It's all sort of like PGP cryptography type of things, which require a centralized database in order to work. But it was interesting that Vitalik had a conversation with Evan from Disco to talk about sort of like their competing views on identity and whether or not it's a good idea to have things stored on chain or not. But I think even the verifiable credentials argument from Disco, at least, it doesn't necessarily provide, I think, a complete alternative to what's being proposed by Vitalik in this DSOC paper. They keep using this language of like, you know, this analogy of the disco where you go and you are like, you know, showing off particular parts of yourself depending on what you wear, and you have a data backpack that you're carrying with you. You can always pull it out. I mean, it is like a still a hyper individualized sort of view on identity, and it doesn't really solve, I think it sounds like to me, some of the things that at least Vitalik is proposing to do as far as like shifting society in a particular way. So they're both kind of like, in my opinion, a bit competing liberal ideas about how to create new forms of identity and social relationship. So all in all, I think at the moment, I'm not really super convinced on either of them as being like a socialist or a left-wing solution, but it's also very difficult to like easily align politics in these types of things. I think it's just going to take a little bit of time before we see both VCs and SBTs be implemented in any meaningful sense so that we can have then like more realistic comparisons between the two. But at the moment, it's like very likely to me, I think that both are going to be pretty bumpy rides. VCs, I think, may be slightly easier to implement and may have an advantage in that way. SBTs are a little bit more ambitious in the sense that they can sort of include verifiable credentials inside of like the workings of an SBT. But I guess it's a question of whether the functionalities or the ideal form of what, for example, Vitalik would like for SBTs is possible in a meaningful amount of time before it sort of gets ruined or co-opted in one way or another. So yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting and a lot of problematic things with the whole decentralized society and soulbound tokens paradigm. So it's a pretty mixed bag for me. In some ways, I can respect and admire that they are considering a lot more of these social aspects in the use of blockchains. On the other side, I do feel like they are still really, really heavily relying on a very liberal and very neoliberal framework for proposing new solutions. But I don't think that necessarily that means that everything is shit. So yeah, so that's kind of my review of the paper. I think it's not going to be anytime soon. Well, I will be considering using soulbound tokens probably. I may be experimenting with them on my own, but certainly wouldn't impose it on others to do so or anything like that. But I think it is an interesting start to probably some bigger conversations that we can have about society and the role of technology in that, and whether or not we want to use these types of technologies for this particular context and for adding more context in a digital space, since it can be difficult to do it in a positive or egalitarian way whenever we exist in such conditions of capitalism as we are right now. So yeah, I think I'll just keep an eye on them still and sort of just profess what my thoughts are as they happen. So yeah, thanks a lot for listening, and I hope that the next time I propose doing a Patreon episode, I can do it a lot faster than I did this time. I apologize for that again. I will try to be better moving forward. So yeah, thanks a lot.